104th episode of the GAK Guitar Shop Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, who is joining me today.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar store.
Hello, my name's Matt, and I am the manager.
Excellent, wonderful. Well, lovely to have you along, gentlemen. Mm. How are you doing?
My mouth is on fire.
Oh, really?
Because I had a really hot pizza. It had ghost chili on it. I think that might have been a foolish choice.
It was called The Wild.
I know, and it was really tasty, but then after a while, it really hurt.
Did you get yourself a drink?
I did. I've got a can of fizzy pop here, Whole Earth Cola. It's really weird.
Okay, not helping.
It's kind of subsided now. But
right. Okay, well, that's good.
It's on the way, but my mouth was seriously bad.
How has the shop been this week, gentlemen?
Good. The sun is out.
The sun
so
is
people
out.
Are starting to venture.
Isn't that topical? Because tomorrow...
because there is no sun.
Well, tomorrow is the solar eclipse.
That's true.
So excited.
Of course, not to you if you're listening to it, the solar eclipse happened
last Friday.
Talk about topical. Last week, can you remember? The solar eclipse.
Speaking of which, I was gonna talk about some of the events we've got coming up, because we've got a couple of cool events coming up. But of course, by the time this podcast is out, both of them will have happened.
Did you attend the cool events we had last
week?
Oh,
yes.
They were good, weren't they?
They were really good events.
Those events that are in the couple of days future past.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're listening to this, this happened in the shop last Sunday, but hopefully we'll get something like this again. We're doing a Martin restring event, because Martin have released these new lifespan strings, which are treated. They're not coated. Don't say coated. They're not coated. They're treated acoustic strings.
Treated what? Nicely,
yeah, treated just, really well.
Yeah, they just look after them really well.
Like those Kobe beef cows where they massage them and feed them beer. They make these strings and just give them a little massage, feed them some beer.
I guess that is how it works. But anyway, we've got this chap, Dave Doll, who is a YouTube phenomenon as far as acoustic guitars go, and Martin string expert with an X. And he's coming in, and he's gonna you just book an appointment. Well, you can't because it's happened, but you know, if it happens again, all you had to do was book an appointment and bring your acoustic in, any acoustic, doesn't even have to be a Martin, and he pops a new set of lifespan strings on it, which is pretty good as far as events go.
It is good. I might bring my tailor in.
You should definitely.
Your tailor?
Yeah, my tailor.
People who have been getting in touch with me to book a place, everyone asks, because they're like saying what guitar they have, and it must be 60-70% a Sigmas.
Which, really?
So probably the closest brand to sort of copycatting Martin.
Yeah.
Actually, talking of Martin, I was reading about Ed Sheeran, because obviously he's got the LX1.
Yeah.
So before they... I think even with his signature... Because he hits the guitar quite, you know, he does like a lot of looping.
Percussive.
And percussive. His tech reckons he was going through a guitar every 3 to 4 shows in terms of breaking the top.
He should get a bigger guitar. It's probably because he plays a kid's guitar. This is what. Should have thought about that.
But then I suddenly thought that, because I do a lot of running, and I think a lot when I'm running. And I was like, because obviously he's friends with Taylor Swift, and she's got the baby Taylor Swift.
Great
guitar. Did Ed Sheeran get the Martin? And she went, oh, I really like that.
Oh, who came first?
Swift or Sheeran?
Who's got a better signature model? Matt Knight.
Swift. Ooh. Look at the invoice. Actually, no, I'm going to say I prefer the Martin.
I prefer the Taylor.
I am really into Taylor Swift. So
yeah, she's amazing.
Yes, she is amazing. So I'm going with the baby Taylor.
Watched recently a video... I think it was a session before that record came out with all the songs that I think is called Red.
You watched a Taylor Swift session?
Yeah, of her, and it was her playing playing all of those songs on that guitar.
Oh, sweet.
Just before the album came out. And it was actually really interesting seeing like people react to these songs that they've never heard before.
In
now
a weird format.
Everyone has heard. And it's great, like, because the thing is like those songs are pretty easy to play. I mean, obviously she's got like a proper techie guitarist and stuff, but like the basic songs are pretty easy to play. And I know this is something we've talked about before, but I think that people like Taylor Swift and Ed Sheeran are doing wonders for not just like music, but like our industry. They're opening up guitar music to people who, like, Ed Sheeran did a duet with Beyonce, like last month.
Yeah.
Like,
but also,
what is like? It's that's incredible. That's so good.
Signature Acoustics.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like, this has got to be the first time. Well, I don't know.
I mean,
actually.
I'm sure
no
there's
idea.
Been.
There must have been the odd one in the past.
Yeah, but. Like Joni Mitchell had one, I think. Oh, yeah. And like there's been. I'm sure Bob Dylan had one. And
anyone who's played a Luna ever has a signature model in it. They seem to only do signature
really?
Models. Well, I was part of one of my old jobs for GAC was listing all the loads of new stuff, and I had to list virtually the entire Luna catalogue and. There were more signature models on there than there were standard line things. It was weird.
I tell you what, Fender must be absolutely over the moon that they jumped on the Matt Skiba.
Oh, yeah.
The Matt Skiba train, like, relatively early. I mean, the first Alkaline Trio records came out in, like, 89 or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly.
Matt Skiba from Alkaline Trio has had a signature
acoustic,
Fender.
It's an acoustic with a heart-shaped...
Heart-shaped hole.
Yeah.
And he's had that for, what, a few years?
Oh, yes.
And he's now just joined as
Blink-182's
singer.
As the replacement Tom DeLonge. Unfortunately, only for this tour, I hear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently it's a temporary replacement. So he's not writing anything new. He's just learnt all of Tom's songs.
Did you see the video that came... Like, they played a show yesterday, so that was...
With Skiba.
Yeah, with Skiba. And it was the first show that they played.
I didn't realise that had happened already.
And, yeah, well, they played a show and there was just one video that did the rounds.
Uh-huh.
And it was brilliant. He was brilliant.
He can actually play live
yeah.
as well, which is great.
I know.
Skiba's actually a good guitarist.
Skiba's
it was
great.
Funny. I listened to Hi, My Name is Mark, which is Mark Hoppus, the bass player from Blink-182.
His podcast. Yeah.
And he had Skiba on the last
Did
one
he?
With them talking about it. And Matt Skiba was trying to talk about how he's virtually had to relearn guitar in order to learn Tom DeLonge's things. And I think it was a really subtle, nice way of saying that Tom DeLonge really can't play guitar.
You know what? Talking of like odd guitar techniques, because I suppose it's just how you learn.
Mm.
And then if no one ever tells you, oh, that's wrong.
Yeah.
That's because with Van Halen, he held the pick between his thumb and second finger. So his first finger was always free for tapping. And like you try and pick... With
you've
not
got no
thumb
strength
first.
In your second finger if you do that. No,
but you know,
weird.
But like some of the stuff that he plays, you're like rhythm and stuff. Like
I love that, Jay,
just...
you're mimicking what it would be like to do that. You play with your entire fist.
I know, yeah.
You strum from your shoulder.
But like on a note like that, I mean, I had guitar lessons I had a few guitar lessons when I first started, which I realised in hindsight, probably I should have stuck at a little bit more. But you know, like I do power chords with my... first finger and little finger, and like that doesn't make any sense
at
all.
I do that as well. It's because both of us, I mean before I discovered math music, I was listening
to The Offspring,
and Blink and Into Punk and all that, and yeah, I do exactly the same. I think it's a common punk thing, isn't it, to do power chords just using your little finger and your first finger. I mean, often I just roll my thumb around the fretboard because of course we had our straps so low.
Yeah,
I had to just hook my thumb over
in order to hold the guitar.
Yeah, it was basically just moving a fist up and down the fretboard.
Maybe they should make a one string capo that like permanently attaches to the, like the Steinbergers had that rolling capo, but it only goes over the
first five frets.
So you
I
can just
like that.
So
first
you can just,
seven frets.
You can just grip it from the back and just
grip
play
it.
Just play the fifth and then just move up the octave.
Perfect.
This will be moderately off topic, but what you just said reminded me of the spider capo, which has in turn reminded me of something that happened last week, which I think you were aware of. You forwarded me on an email from a kid who was doing his coursework, a 12-year-old fella doing his coursework at school, and it was some form of marketing based thing, which I'm surprised that kids that young are doing lessons in
got
that sort
there
of thing.
Early.
I guess so. I guess so.
I mean,
but he was basically had to come up with a product for an industry area, and the product he'd come up with would be appropriate for us to sell. So he messaged us to say, "Look, could you give me some feedback on this for my coursework?" And you know, it only took 5 minutes to reply an email, but so I did. I sent him back some feedback on it. But the product he'd come up with was
the spider capo.
No. The multi-plectrum. It's a star-shaped plectrum where each of the tips are made out of a different material. So you have felt, glass.
Oh, that's terrifying.
There was turtle shell on there, which I needed to, and bone as well. You know, which obviously he wouldn't quite be able to do.
Human bone.
But yeah, it was quite,
It was a great idea.
He was like, so that, you know, you don't have to go to the effort of changing pedals or amp settings to change your tone. Brilliant.
Also, that reminds me, when I went to a guitar show in 2004, I think I bought a pick called the Jellyfish, which was basically a plastic pick, but on the end it had like the thicker end of like guitar strings, like really stiff, and there was like a row of them. And it kind of, when you strummed it, it sounded like a 12 string.
Oh, I understand. So it looked like a little jellyfish.
Yeah. But it was like a metal pick, effectively.
What happened to that pick, Matt?
I think it broke all my strings and I just lost it.
Broke my heart.
I think we can safely say that it was not a bestseller. In fact, that fella probably only sold that one to me. And then closed that business.
Do you reckon he's listening to that? He's like, I remember. He's listening to this. I remember that.
If you're out there,
I can't believe that child grew up to be Matt Knight.
Well,
Matt _ Knightsy.
Nitro.
Okay,
well, gentlemen, yes, that concludes our introduction to the podcast. Let's move
on. That was an introduction. I thought that was the podcast.
Yeah, I thought we were off.
Yeah, that was a 15-minute introduction to the podcast. The subject for this podcast is as suggested on the group, Matt Knight put forward a question asking people if they had anything.
It wasn't a question, it was a desperate
plea. We're
running out of ideas.
It was midday on a Thursday. We record these on Thursday evenings and none of us had thought of anything. But we got some great suggestions.
I was commuting and I was looking at the scenery and I was like, oh, the podcast!
Brilliant. Well, anyway, so the theme of this week's podcast is gear for session. So I thought we could talk about the sort of equipment that's appropriate for session musicians. One of the suggestions was to do a hired gun special and talk about the gear that particular session musicians use as kind of unsung heroes. But I thought maybe we could come at it from an angle of what would be appropriate session gear. And I guess a lot of the equipment we normally talk about is maybe quite specific. And I think that, you know, the question, I guess, is do session players have different requirements than us?
Yeah, it's weird because actually when I've watched videos before of like session players like Brent Mason, who's like, you know, one of the most recorded guitarists ever, or, you know, like Steve Lukather or any of those guys, they actually tend to session. They tend to say the same one that they've played for years and years and years and years, and they've got it because they know that instrument inside out. And
yeah, that's true. Albert Lee, speaking of another Music Man artist,
yeah,
as you mentioned.
I mean, a regular customer here, a guy named Ray Russell, played on like thousands of records, and you know, in fact, in the very early days, he used like a Burns Trisonic, and then he's used a Strat for years and years. And the reason he used the Burns was he couldn't afford a Fender Jazzmaster. So he had the Burns, and it gave him a very, very similar sound. And he sculpted his sound out of that and used it for countless recordings.
I guess that whereas we, when purchasing something or trying something out, might be looking for a very particular tone, a session musician would need to look at something that could do a lot of different things, so they could deal with any situation. So they'd be looking for the most versatile instrument on the market. So I guess in a sense that the players that we're talking about, the people like Albert Lee, who have used the Music Man Albert Lee signature for years and years, I guess in those cases the versatility comes from having used an instrument for years and years, so you know your way around it to an extent that you can get everything out of it.
You can just plug into an amp and go bish bash bosh, and there you go. Because I suppose a lot of it comes from, you know, a lot of the signature tone of a player comes in a sense from, as people say, the fingers and the kind of instrument.
Yeah, I think Steve Burrows asked that on the group recently, didn't he?
I mean,
where do you get your tone from?
I mean, there's a lot of players out there who you instantly recognise them as a player no matter what they actually play.
Yeah.
But then again, I suppose maybe from a session player's point of view, a lot of the players you don't know who they are because they're just turning up and they've got to be really.
But also, surely as a session musician, inherently, like I mean, I guess you know you would like to think that you know people will recognise you, but surely the point of using a session musician a lot of the time is so that it doesn't, like,
have any character, so it stays in
the
background.
You know, so yeah, so it doesn't go to the forefront. So like, it
sounds like a guitar.
I assume, like, you know, whoever plays guitar on Beyonce's records is an incredible guitarist. I bet that it's an incredible guitarist who's played on loads of records, but I couldn't tell you particularly what they.
Isn't it Orianthe?
Like. Is it Orianthe?
I don't know. Actually, it's definitely a.
Oh no! Girl. It's well, certainly her live guitarist. I follow her on Instagram.
Not the one from the Iron Maidens, is it?
Don't know. No. It's I can't remember her name, but I follow her on Instagram. So that was a terrible example.
But I know exactly what you mean. Those players are they're great, incredibly accomplished, but really interchangeable. Like Beyonce's guitarist could be Orianthe.
Yes. Or could be like.
Well, Nathan East said the same thing. You know, when he started out, he was literally jumping from session to session, doing like 4 or 5 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like one studio to another, you just get a call like, right, you need to come and play on this. And you can't exactly wheel a truck of, you
guitars
know, one
around.
Of 6 guitars.
But he said himself that he had turned up at sessions and been confused. People had thought they'd booked Nate Watts and Nathan East had turned up, which is really a
Who's
bit
Nate Watts?
Nate Watts is... another famous session bass player. He is Stevie Wonder's bass player for the bulk of the time, but is a famous session bass player as well. Their bass playing is really interchangeable. The two of them, I wouldn't be able to tell them apart on a record.
Right.
They for me summarise that essential 80s active 5-string bass sound, that like really scooped, really modern, really clean sound. And all those sounds on all of those records that you'd really pick out are probably one of those two fellas.
Right, okay.
So, you know, it's...
He had a great bass sound. Like, when he played... When he just had the Ditto Looper and he was just... I was like, man. Like, how much you can really get out of a bass sometimes because, you know, for me, coming from bass is like, root note, root note. And, like, you know, he's just like... Playing it how I play guitar.
Yeah.
But much, much better.
Well, it was a 6-string. He was playing one of those ridiculous... Yamaha TRBs, which is a 6-string.
Oh, what, the one that I did the video on?
No, that's an Ibanez BTB.
Oh, sorry, you did. No, sorry.
The Yamaha. Similar idea.
His one's got a different flag on every fret.
Yeah, a different flag from all the places that he's been on tour.
Oh, that's
cool.
And
he puts a new flag on each one.
Gets a new bass built. sorry, I've been somewhere else.
I went to another country.
But
Sealand.
That bass is unique because the string spacing on it is the same as a 4-string, but it's a 6-string.
Oh, wow.
So now think about
neck.
The neck is absolutely ludicrous.
That's mental.
Which is why he was saying that he meant to bring his 5-string and he brought the 6-string instead. And he was saying like halfway through the night that he was starting to get a bit of hand fatigue. It was like, yeah, you've been playing for 2 hours on a bass that could technically be used as a chopping board. but yeah, anyway, let's talk about some equipment that we think would be great for session players then. Let's talk about the guitars then, which would definitely be kind of the most versatile all trick pony guitars that we do.
Well, the first one I picked out, and this actually came out from a guy who I was talking to today who quit his job late last year and has decided to move to Austin for 6 months to just go and play a load of music.
Wicked.
And he's taking a very, very similar guitar to this one, which is the new American Deluxe HSS Shawbucker Strat. Shawbucker being the humbucker they've placed in the bridge.
Are they the Zebra ones? Zebra ones.
Designed by a guy named Tim Shaw, who's worked for Fender for absolutely years. Fender somehow didn't realise that some of his pickups were going for like $600 in the second-hand market. He's like one of the most renowned pickup makers. Like, he helped...
the market pickups.
He basically helped redesign the vintage PAFs in Gibsons in the late 80s. He basically bought the PAF design back, like the early style Gibson ones. And he's worked for Fender for years as like a builder.
And then
he's built pickups on the side, and they had no idea that it was the same fella. So they were like, "Well, maybe you should build pickups for us and design some pickups." And that's what they've done. But these HSS, for me, just cover everything.
I guess an HSS as a pickup configuration well, for me, is like, kind of the I love does
plan,
everything.
Yeah, I mean, I love plan strat, so I really like the neck position. So you've got HSS, you've got two single coils in the neck in the middle, and they're the noiseless ones.
Okay, so, cool. Again, that's exactly the pickup that I'd expect.
Yeah. Yeah, because you
and a Strat is exactly the guitar.
You still want it to sound almost like a Strat, but you want it to lose a little bit of that Strat
twang
character, in a sense. You know what I mean? You've then got so five-way position switching with S1, so you've got extra switching positions on there as well. So you can have humbucking coils in series, middle and pickups, or middle pickup and the inside coil of the humbucker. So still like the fourth position of a Strat. Middle and neck, and then neck, and then with the S1, I think it allows you to run series and parallel in a couple of the other positions as well.
Yeah, it will do. I mean, if it's the same as S1 in standard American Deluxe guitars.
Yeah, I think it's the same. So you can do things like run all three pickups at once. And
do
stuff like
the
that.
New ones have the roller nut?
Yeah, these ones have the roller nut, which basically means your guitar. For me, like using those, when I used to have a Strat with one on, they just never went out of tune.
Once the strings settle down.
Could you explain a roller nut to me? It's foreign to bass guitarists.
Essentially, what it is you've got where the nut is. Instead of it just being like a piece of, I don't even know what
Corian,
they are.
Normally.
Right. Okay. So that's been sort of shaped. What it is it's a metal. I realise that these hand gestures I'm making to you are going to be great for radio.
Excellent radio.
It's the same
radio.
Yeah. It's the same. It's a piece of metal, but in the grooves. Instead of it being like just a static piece of material, you've got two ball bearings that go either side of the string. So when you bend the string or when you stretch the string, instead of the string coming up against friction and resistance, the ball bearings move slightly, and so they allow a bit more give. Because I mean, strings go out of tune because they slip. You know, there's that's the only thing that causes, you know, after they've had a chance to sort of settle down, and as long as you're not leaving them in front of a radiator, the only reason strings go out of tune is because they slip. And if you're using a tremolo, they're going to, you know, slip a lot more than they otherwise would. So if you can take steps to...
Especially on a Strat.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And if you can take steps to eliminate the amount of slippage that there would be on a string, and by that, you know, so you take away any areas of friction... or at least as many areas of friction as you can, then perfect. And that's how these guitars work so well, because you've got the effort, that roller nut. And then the machine heads are the like Spurzel locking machine heads.
Yeah. Oh, right. I really like those. Yeah. You see those a lot on more metal edge stuff,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the way that they work is very similar. So there's a little like screw at the back of the machine head, which you unscrew to take the string out, and then you pull the string through the hole, tighten up the little screw at the back of the machine head, and again it pushes two ball bearings together across the so that the string is held in place by a ball bearing. So if it moves a little bit, the balls are gonna like roll a little bit, but they'll roll back when the tension's
released.
You've
also got less winding, because you just and put it through
that's the other thing, yeah.
Lock the thing in and then just tune it up.
Half a turn and you're in.
Brilliant. And this HSS Strat, what series is that?
American Deluxe.
Oh, it is American Deluxe.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they
yeah.
also do the HSS in the American Standard, which has the two Fat 50s and the Shawbucker in it.
I see.
But I didn't realise the Shawbucker replaced the whatever pickup was in the previous.
It's everywhere
American
now,
Standard.
Isn't it? It's yeah. in everything now. The
I think they're just Zebra. Yeah, it's kind of.
They've just gone, oh. Oh yeah, cool. These
basically sound really, really, really good, and they do. They sound. I plugged it in for the guy today, which sort of kind of made me mention that. And we were talking about his custom shop version, effectively. And he was like, "If you'd have given me both at the time, if I knew I was going to Austin for 6 months rather than take something that was nearly $4,000, I might have just taken that for £1,235."
Yeah, wow.
Because I think they're a great, great guitar out of the box, really versatile. And I think that's the thing. If you're a session guy and you've been playing for a while, or you're getting into something and you need something versatile, most people are predominantly a Fender player, or they are like a Gibson player.
Yeah.
you know, in that sense. I mean, obviously there's other brands, but you know, if you love Fenders and you want something versatile, then you'd probably go for a deluxe Strat.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's got other features that modernize it as well. Like things like does it have like a contoured heel? I imagine it does on the.
It does. It's
things.
Got a contoured heel. It's 9.5 to 12 inch radius.
Yeah, so they're compound radius.
Which I think those sort of features. That's more. I mean, you say about people either being a Fender player or a Gibson player, but those are features that are synonymous with Ibanez, Charvel, Jackson.
Yeah.
This is more. I mean, essentially, making a versatile Fender is making a Fender a bit like a cross between a Fender and a Charvel. Or a Jackson or an Ibanez.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, in terms of, like, really for me, like, the ultimate session guitar that we've had in recent times was the Charvel Guthrie Govan.
As he is a session player. So.
I mean, you know, his guitar was just the ultimate in terms of tone versatility, because he's played on everything, in so many records, so many different styles, and he's doing it all from one guitar.
Yeah.
And I think one of the closest you do get to that are these Strats,
yeah.
Realistically.
Yeah, I guess so. So we haven't actually mentioned anything from the other side, anything from Gibson. We've just spoken about Fenders, and I guess the Charvel as well is a Gibson owned brand.
Fender owned brand.
A Fender owned brand, and very much a Strat in different woods.
Super Strat.
Yeah, Super Strat. Hey, well, why would we not cite a Super Strat? Why the HSS over an HSH or an HH?
I don't know, really.
Are they doing the HSH?
In fact, they do an HSH in the standard Fender Deluxe range, don't they?
I know, they used to. I don't know if they still do with the Shawbuckers.
I don't know.
That's a cool guitar. I like HSH. I think that's a really cool pickup configuration.
Well, just as a versatile configuration.
Yeah.
And I would imagine then we could consider maybe things like the S-Series Ibanezes for being good session instruments and things like that. But what about Gibson? What sort of things do Gibson have to offer?
Well, I guess the new, if you want versatility, then the new standards are, you know, they're certainly up there. You've got all, you know, both pickups are they're burst buckers, which again are, you know, they're pathy kind of, but they're modern as well, you know, they're very, very modern sounding. And they're both those pickups are core splittable. Both of them, you can reverse the polarity, you know, reverse the polarity, and therefore turn up the hilarity. I think about that every time anyone says, "Oh, these, can you reverse the polarity on these?" I'm like,
definitely make that joke.
Yep,
make that joke every time.
Yeah, well, and it never goes down well.
For me, I mean, if you're a session player, having the G-Force, the Tronicle tuning system, I mean. You know, for anything, you know, because, you know, things like being able to
cue up different tunings and things like that. Yeah.
Well, you know, put it in the middle position, split the two coils, give yourself a Teddy-like sound and put it in open G and play something like Keith Richards. I mean, you're going to get that from that sort of guitar.
Yeah.
You know, and you can, and because of the zero fret, the adjustable brass nut, you can get the setup however you want. I think that's the other key thing. If you've got a
guitar. I guess so. Everything needs to be a bit perfect. Like, I wouldn't mind too much having a bit of a shonky setup on something if it gave it a certain character.
I suppose if you're in a like an originals band and you're going in and recording a record, you want it to sound like you, and you want the gear that's kind of, I suppose, got your character to it.
Yeah, exactly. But you want the absolute reverse of that as a session player. Yeah.
The other thing that's worth noting with those new Gibsons is. And I think about this quite a lot. One of the fellas who used to work here did quite a lot of session bass work, and he said that his favourite bass that he owned was, at the time that he was doing a lot of this work, was an 80s Squire. And he was like, you can't show up to a session with a Squire. You cannot. You will be asked to leave. It doesn't matter how good it sounds. You can't show up to one of these sessions. It doesn't matter how it sounds. It doesn't matter how good you are. If you show up with a Squire, you won't get hired again, because people are like, oh, you got me one of these. And, you know, I think a lot of the time, you know, sometimes the session guys have to have, the session musicians have to have something that looks the part.
Yeah, the producers want to see it.
Absolutely. What looks better than a Les Paul Standard at the moment?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they look, you know, they've got like that sort of almost, a lot of them have got the candy finishes, which gives you a bit of a sparkle. They look, under lights, they look so impressive. so impressive.
Yeah.
You know, there is, it looks like a Les Paul that jumps out at you.
Yeah.
You know, they really do look phenomenal. And it's, a lot of time people speak to me and they're like, oh, you know, I know you shouldn't be picking a guitar on what it looks like. It's like, why not? You know,
you've got to play it.
You are the one who's got to play it. So don't take something that you don't like the look of. Of course you need to get something that you like. You know, of course you do. You shouldn't feel bad about not wanting to buy something because it isn't a colour that you like. It's, you know, if you don't like the look of it, then don't buy it. And those, you know, I think you'd be very hard pushed to find someone who didn't like the look of those 2015 Gibsons.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They are pretty stunning looking guitars.
I suppose as well, if you really were working to a budget, you could go down to like just an LPM. Like if you wanted, you get the advantage of the Tronicle tuners. You just don't get any advantage of the coil splitting.
True.
Maybe on the budget side of things.
Yeah,
but
still good and still really, really modern sounding. Mm. I guess, which is what you want from it.
Nah, mate, Les Paul standard. Just nah.
Does not look.
Not on my
record. Banging.
Not on my record.
Not
on my record. Not an LPM on my record, mate. Les Paul standard.
Is that an LPM? Get out.
Get out.
That is the potential of an LPM, though. Yeah. I guess.
Get out.
Speaking of that sort of thing, on a bass front, I was talking to a session bassist who I know. Who has got himself he's recently got himself a five string custom shop jazz bass,
yeah,
and that was actually what he was buying when I saw him, but he plays now just an ordinary passive custom shop four string precision bass, and before that he had like an Overwater active five string, you know, ridiculous thing, and before that probably something by Status or something like that,
Fedora.
You know. Yeah, yes, yeah, something like that. But and he was talking about how stuff has changed completely and how now, how it used to be, everyone wanted you had to have something
active,
really
something,
but
yeah.
Also something really unique, like
right.
The producers wanted to not know what on earth that bass was that you were bringing in. Had to be made out of the craziest woods, like Bingers,
yeah.
And Jatobas and Avancols and things like that, and it had to be some nuts active bass, and now they just want
a P bass, yeah.
They just he said even he was replacing the five string jazz bass that he bought was to replace a five string I can't remember the guy's name, Daryl something, it's a Lackland, it's called the D5, the series, and he was buying a five string Fender jazz bass because the producer on the record he was working on was saying, if you're going to play a jazz bass, it should be a Fender. You don't need a copycat of it, even though the Lackland's about twice the price of a custom shop jazz bass. And it just goes to show, I guess, how much impact that has on it, and how you, as a session player, you do have to have the right instrument.
And I guess it's interesting how like the role of the producer has evolved over, you know, over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. You know, 40, 50 years ago, the producer was just, you know, to a certain degree, it was the person who knew a lot about music and knew how to make a record sound good. Whereas now, a lot of producers are people, you know, and by that, I mean, they'd spent time around musicians, they'd spent time around guitarists and drummers and bassists and you know, whereas now a lot of producers, you can learn how to be a wicked producer at home.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't have to have spent time touring, you don't have to have spent time going to gigs. You can learn to be a banging producer at home in your bedroom. And therefore, you know, and that's not me casting aspersions on anybody, you know, forming their career, but because of this interchange of where guitars are coming more into popular modern, you know, music, which, you know, and when I say popular music, I mean the sort of music that was in the charts when we were growing up, which wasn't guitar music, but now guitars are coming into that style of music. It's a different style of producer, and those producers are like it's constantly like, no, you need a Fender. It's not like, oh yeah, yeah, I know what that is. That's a cool, like, weird thing from like, you know, backwater California. It's like, oh yeah, well, you need a Fender because that's what sounds good. And, you know, it's just the way that music is changing, I think. And it's not, that's not a criticism of modern music in the slightest. I think it's just a natural evolution of how these things go.
Yeah, certainly. I agree. Should we talk about amps, gentlemen? Yeah. Amplifiers. What ants. Would be a... Yeah, ants.
the Pixar.
The Pixar movie, Ants.
With Sylvester Stallone.
Is he Hopper? Is he the bad guy?
No, he's the really butch one that looks a bit like Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, okay, right. I haven't seen Ants in probably 10 years. Maybe 15.
Solid film.
Solid.
But amp-wise, because, of course, guitar is only going to be half of what you're going to need as a session player. So we've got the versatility from things like the Deluxe Strats or the 2015 Les Paul Standards. What are we going to have backing us up that's going to offer us the same sort of versatility?
Well, I mean, I thought this one anyway, but actually, I suppose it from what we've discussed, it has kind of a little bit more resonance. The fact that I've sold two this week, both to people who are session players. One guy who was like, "This is going in my home studio. It's probably going to replace everything I've got." And the other guy was, "I'm going out and gigging this tonight after he bought it." The new Mesa Boogie Mark 5 25.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, this brand was going to get mentioned as Mesa have always marketed themselves as the brand that does everything.
Well, the thing is I suppose in a way it's like yes and no, because if you buy a rectifier, it sounds like a rectifier. It sounds like a produced rock record straight out of the box. You know, real nice tight gain, like sparkling cleans. And then you've got some of their like cleaner amps, but the Mark V covers everything on like a tonal spectrum.
I mean, I would say if the Mark V, the Mini, the 25 is great, but I think if you can spend the extra money, get the Mark V. Yeah. Get the proper one. They're unbelievable.
I suppose the only advantage is, I would say, the Mini one if you're maybe doing stuff at home because you've got the cab clone. But the big one is going to, you know, because you've got 90, 45 90 watts, or 10, you've got three channels, three selectable preamps per channel.
Don't you get you get three channels on the Mark V 25?
No, you get two channels, three preamps per channel. The other one's three channels, three. It's kind of like... The full Mark V is like having three amps,
are they? They're just voicings.
I suppose it's like having three amps in one amp.
What about dual rectifiers?
It sounds like a dual rec though.
Oh, okay.
If you want that sound,
you know, if you, I think with a dual rec, there's sort of two extremes, and both of them are like sort of stadium rock. You know, if you want to sound like Metallica, then buy a dual rec. And if you want to sound like Green Day, then buy a dual rec. And I think, you know, they're great amps, but they sound like a dual rec. You immediately know when someone's playing a dual rec.
You listen to any of the early Foo Fighters and it's all rectifier stuff. All of that early 2000s. And it goes back to the producer. Like, you're going to turn up for a session. What were you going to have with you if you knew you were going to turn up to a rock session? You probably have a dual rec.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be playing through a dual rec.
And it's, you know, it's... I think, again, talking about sort of the evolution of modern music, I think that those bigger boogie amps have been struggling because, you know, you've got the three big ones. So you've got the triple rec, and nobody wants 150 watts anymore. You've got a dual rec, which sounds like a dual rec. You've got a single rec, and if you're going to spend 1,100 quid on a boogie, you're not going to buy a single rec, you're going to buy a Mark 525.
See.
You know what I mean? Because they're more versatile and they're more usable.
Yeah. I think probably the best all round, because it'll get you, I mean, you know, you were there when we did the video and it kind of gets you everywhere from sort of Fender Kleins to nice high drives.
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay, well, how about this? How about something that sounds like the Mark 525 that also sounds like the triple rec and the dual rec and the rec. It also sounds like any number of Marshalls, any number of Fenders, and any number of...
I'd have
Black
to say,
Stars,
you'd be crazy,
else.
Joe.
Oh, yes. I am not crazy. I am, in fact... I'm talking about the Kemper profiling amp.
Yeah.
Surely that's got to feature in a sort of...
I've seen so many home studio photos and like gig setups where people have got those now.
Yeah, exactly. Surely that and I guess we have to throw the DV Mark in at this stage, which actually
the multi-amp.
Was it your mate's studio where he basically profiled everything on a Kemper and then sold everything off?
I think that was his plan. I don't think he ended
I think, I suppose, in a way,
I think his plan was to sell everything, and then he was like, oh, I really like having stuff. So he kept all his stuff.
But what do you guys think? What do you think about these sort of things? I mean, on the side of the DV Mark, we now record all of our video demos through a DV Mark.
Yeah, I mean,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I suppose what it is for is that, you know, if you're going to play on a record, you could play through a Kemper and no one would really ever know, because they sound very, very good and you can dial in the tone you want. But if you're playing at home, for me, like, I don't want to look at a Kemper. I want to look at a cool Marshall or a cool Fender. Or if I'm going to a gig, I want to see people playing cool Marshalls and Fenders. I don't want to see a Kemper profile.
I love looking at my Supersonic.
Yeah.
The Supersonic's quite a good one. Surely that's quite versatile. The Blues... The Blues Deluxe probably just has it, sort of three channels and reverb.
Well, it doesn't really have three channels, though, does it? It's got clean drive and more drive.
And that's the Hot Rod Deluxe.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
No, you said Blues Deluxe. Slightly different.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's two. There's the Blues Deluxe and the Hot Rod Deluxe. Well, there's the Blues series and the Hot Rod series.
Actually, on a quick side note, the guy who is now the head of Custom Shop Fender, Mike Lewis, helped design a lot of those amps, things really? Like the Blues Deluxe and the Hot Rod and stuff like that.
So the Blues, and the Blues Junior. The Blues series. Actually, the Blues Junior is a weird one because it's the Hot Rod Blues Junior is the official title.
Yeah,
I think.
So it's the clean channel. It's a 15-watt clean channel of the Hot Rod Deluxe, I think.
Right. Okay.
I'm assuming.
But essentially, because you've got the Blues, there's the Blues Deluxe and the Blues DeVille, and then you've got the Hot Rod Deluxe and the Hot Rod DeVille, and the Hot Rods are sort of they've got black tone
hot rods
in there. Yeah, well, they're hot rodded. They've got the extra gain. It's not a channel. It's just more drive.
It's just more drive.
It's a more drive switch.
But you wouldn't consider that? You don't think that makes a good session out?
I did consider it. Yeah, I did consider it. And I bought Supersonic.
I think the thing is it's more of a great solid live amp because it gives you a really good, big, loud, clean sound.
Yeah.
But in terms of a session, it's not going to sound as good as a Princeton or a Deluxe or a Twin, which a Twin is probably what you're going to go through.
Yeah.
And it's not going to have the same drive that you're going to get from a Marshall. So if you're going to a studio where they might have...
Yeah, that's true.
But then again, most people are probably ported over to the Kemper. Because at the end of the day, when it's probably being recorded and coming out of a pair of monitors that cost £10,000, then it's... But that's the thing, is like, you know... And I quite happily admit that, you know, a lot of times you listen to a record and you probably can't tell if the gear they're using cost £50,000 or £50. But when I see a band and when I'm playing at home... want to see a load of cool stuff. I don't want to look at a little digital screen and be like, because it's just not the same. It doesn't feel the same.
I saw a few years ago, I went to see Fortet at the Concord 2 down in Brighton. And I love Fortet. I bought that record. I bought the record he was touring, which I can't remember the name of. Was great. It was a really, really cool record. And he did this record back in like the 2004 or something called Rounds, which was amazing, like one of my favorite ever like electro records, and it's all electro. But when he played live, he could have, as far as I was concerned, he pushed play on iTunes and then played Football Manager for like an hour and a half.
Imagine that. Like,
he was
still, every so often you just see him going, yes.
he was still on the stage, and I've got no doubt, I've got absolutely no doubt that he was actually like triggering everything real time, but like it was so boring to watch, like, so, and it was like I left halfway through. I never leave during a set. I'll always stay to the end, but I just left. It was I left and went and watched my mate's metal band around the corner, and it was great. Like he played through a full stack, and it was really loud. It was wicked, but like at home, I'd definitely rather listen to Fortet. Like, so you know, it's
funny. Really, the only band I've ever seen where I've never seen any amps on stage was when I saw Meshuggah. Because they do everything now through Axe FX.
Yeah.
Back of house. They don't even step on any pedals. All the program. Because they now, on the last tour, or the tour before the last tour, which is when they first started doing it, they started playing to a click. Only purely because what the click did, the click track had MIDI program changes that then changed the Axe FX
patches.
Oh,
that's ridiculous.
During songs. Because everything is, you know, it's that kind of music is designed to be really tight and really mechanical. And that's what they were doing. So it is,
and again, like this is, and I realise I'm bringing this up a lot, but again, it comes down to the sort of evolution of music. And I don't mean to hijack your I don't mean to hijack your topic here, Joe, but like that again is imagine trying to get away with doing that 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like the metal dudes would have laughed you off stage if you were playing everything through a digital modeling amp. And if a band was playing everything through a digital modeling amp and they weren't treading on their pedals and it was all being triggered electronically, the metal guys would have laughed them off stage. Whereas now, like, everything's changed, and that's exactly what people want. And Meshuggah, you know, you can, you know, and we hear it all the time, people sort of coming into the shop and going, cool, look at these 8 strings, cool. Meshuggah are pushing boundaries like very few other people are in, like, you know, again, like modern music and modern metal. They've not been afraid to go like, no, like, we need an 8th string and we're going to use them all.
Well, they put duct tape over the high 4.
Do they?
Yeah.
No, he only one of them duct tapes the top 2.
Oh, is it?
Because the other one, the main guitarist, Frederick something, I forget his last name, his favourite guitarist is Alan Holdsworth. He's like super into jazz fusion. And yeah, they play this really like polyrhythmic.
But how different is that?
Well, I mean, they like, exactly, you know, they, for me, are the originators of 8-string music, in the sense of modern 8-string, not like in terms of jazz is using 8-strings, in terms of, like, you know, everyone uses the term djent, but that only came out after them.
Yeah, they
coined it.
Did they coin it themselves?
I don't know.
It was coined around them.
It was coined around them, and everyone...
Yeah, because he said it in... they didn't come up with a name, but didn't he say it in an interview? They asked what... if to describe them, their sound, and he went, it's like...
Oh, really?
Oh, really? I had no idea that.
I mean, I heard that from...
I mean, I just made that up.
I just made that up now. I heard that from a fellow at work, so I have no authentication of that.
Oh, weird.
It sounded like
but,
a legit
I mean,
story.
You know, it could have been... It must have been the same as when Korn started using 7-strings.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so. Absolutely. And, I don't think it's...
And now it's the same, just...
Yeah, and I don't think
someone bought the 9-string yesterday. Think how much lower that is.
The IBD, the RG9.
Amazing. Oh! Speaking of weird things like that, do you know what turned up today? Which I got photos of, which actually I put up on the group. The Ibanez fan fret basses.
Did they?
Yeah, they turned up.
So they're the first like
production line
fan fret.
Yeah.
How do I see? I don't really understand how it works. So they're fanned in order to offer better intonation. Is that correct?
Is correct.
So
yes.
You couldn't.
There is a common misconception that it's something to do with playability.
But it's not.
Intonation. It's to do with intonation.
So if you were to then, for example, use the Dario balanced tension strings, you would be throwing yourself out.
I mean,
do you think the Dario are going to come out with some like really fan fret balanced tensions? They're like, they've still got it wrong. and we're going to prove them right.
Well, because you've got fan frets, which is closer, and then you've got true temperament, which is the one where all the frets are different level. Every string has its own set of frets.
The neck winds as well as as well as angling the frets on those. But yeah, on these, I played it and I didn't notice a difference.
Really?
Like sort of leaning back, so I could only see the back of the neck of the guitar. I couldn't, you know, I wasn't missing anything. It just felt the same as if it was straight, which was quite cool. Because everyone was like, the guys watching me were like, wow, it's amazing that you're adapting to that so quickly.
Yes, I didn't realise you were such a good player. Does it make you look like a better player?
Because you're playing something fan fretted, you basically look amazing. But it's just the same.
You know what? You should get some like slow-mo. I reckon if you got like a slow-mo panning like video of you playing a fan fret bass, it'd just be like you're in a Michael Bay film or something. Like...
Oh yeah, they are pretty epic. Gents, we've been relatively off topic on this one, but I think we've spoken about the bulk of the things that we think make great session setups. We should take a handful of questions. We only have a few this week, but yes, I think we should take some. So first of all, Chris says, all these questions are from the Facebook group, by the way, which is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group.
Yeah, nice.
Get on it. Chris says, Well, I've actually paraphrased this quite a bit. What do you guys prefer? An amp with more controls or the bare minimum? Could you live without the bass, middle and treble?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, the things that spring to mind are, I guess, the Tiny Terrors and the TH-30s, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tiny Terror, what, you know, it, I mean, they're basically taken. It was, I was about to mention something that I can't talk about then.
oh, you were.
yeah. It's what they do is they take a good frequency, and when you turn that up, it kind of automatically sort of, it's adjusting the other frequency, like almost like the ISF on the Black Stars.
Yeah.
It goes, it's infinite shape frequency, so it goes between something brighter, tighter, and more American sounding,
yeah,
at zero, and something more mid-heavy and British sounding.
So it's like driving an automatic car.
Yeah, because as you're turning, as you're going down to something more bright and American, it's giving you less bass and pushing the top end more. Yeah. So it's adjusting several things at once.
Yeah.
But I mean,
so you can't cock up with these. It's basically because you could set up a three-band EQ badly. But I guess the idea then is with these intelligent tone.
I suppose
tone
that's the case with the Black Star. That's not the case with the Orange. And I would actually disagree with you on the Tiny Terror. I don't really like the Tiny Terror.
Whoa.
I think the Tiny Terror was, I respect it immensely for what it was. It's not that I don't like it. That's not, I think that.
You just said you didn't like it.
I did. But the reason that I said it is because I think that the OR15 is like everything.
Oh, yeah. The OR15 is probably one of the coolest looking amps I've ever seen.
It's just, it's so good. It's so good. Like, and it's not that much more than the Tiny Terror. It's, you know, it's a, like, you've got the three-band EQ and it's in the proper chassis and it doesn't weigh that much more. And I just, like, I think that having the three-band EQ, and I realize that it's very, like, weird for me to be saying, nah, you need more controls. You need it to be more complicated. And Matt being like, nah, just that one control, it's fine. Like, I think having the three-band EQ makes a huge difference on an amp like that. And actually, on pretty much any amp, I think I would need at least a two-band EQ.
I think the thing is we are, you know, when talking about the things like the Black Star, we're talking about amps that are designed to be very simple, so you're living without them regardless.
Yeah.
I've got an amp that's got bass, middle, treble, gain, and volume, and I prefer single-channel amps, hands down.
Yeah.
I don't like anything with more than one channel. But then I've also got an amp that's just bass, treble, and volume.
Yeah.
And for me, bass and treble, mid, yeah. But, you know, I really like Princeton's because it just, in fact, you've got volume, bass, treble.
Yeah.
Or like the, you know, like Chris, who's on the group, I think put this question forward, uses a Marshall 1974X, and that's just volume and tone. And it's kind of like, yeah, if you can dial it in with that. I mean, I plugged an SG into that, and it just was like, yes, this sounds amazing. But well, maybe if you plug in like a Strat, you're going to think, well, maybe I wish I could. I suppose maybe it comes down to what sort of guitar you're playing.
Yeah. Really affordable things that sound wicked. I would cite the Fender Vaporizer.
Yeah.
Which has.
But I really like
doesn't
those
even
kind
have
of
gain.
Like,
you just have volume.
Those
volume and tone.
Plug and play amps. You kind of just. It's all about using your guitar, really, isn't it? With those, you kind of just turn it up to the level you want, and then
exactly,
they
just make an amp that sounds a particular way. And if you like that, that's great.
Just never hit the foot switch.
Yeah,
never. Unless you know what it does. I bought this vaporizer and I hit the foot switch and the volume went to full and it's like, it's because that's why it's the vaporizer.
I hit the foot switch and all the windows in my house fell out.
It's the loudest. Is it 14 watts or 13 watts?
It's like less than 12, I think.
I can't believe how loud it is. I mean, the loudest 15 watts I think I've ever heard is the Jim Root Orange.
Another great amp.
And that has a three-band EQ and is the same price as a Tiny Terror.
I just think it's a better amp. I want to clear this up. I don't, like, I mean, I love the Orange stuff. I just think that the, personally, if you want to spend that sort of money, buy Crush Pro. I think that is I think that's a better amp than Tiny Terror.
You are sitting on the side of the fence
that says I need
more control.
So you're holding hands with bass, middle, and treble.
Not really the bass. I mean,
while I'm sitting lonely in the pub with volume, just going, yeah. Where's Reverb? Really I haven't seen him for ages.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the other thing is obviously you need an amp with obviously you need a Reverb.
Reverb's on the
amp.
Fence. Like, do I go bass, middle, and treble, or just come and point like,
it? Reverb's hanging out with me for sure.
So I'm basically by myself. Yeah. Talking to someone who's really loud.
The next question comes from another Chris, a different Chris on the podcast. Now we're
podcast
not
group. We're podcast, on the podcast group.
We're on the podcast, and there's no one called Chris here.
There was last week.
That's true. Well, it was Krista.
Yeah.
Which is
I wasn't here. I haven't listened to it yet. Sorry.
No, that's okay. It's not that interesting.
Right. Okay,
you won't like it. It's a bass special.
Oh. Is the answer precision bass?
I think it was.
Yeah.
No, the answer was bass
no spoilers,
six.
No spoilers.
The answer was bass six.
No spoilers.
I'm sorry.
Now I'm feeling spoilers.
So, we're not actually going to answer this question. We're going to talk about the result of this question because Chris on the podcast group asked, he said, nowadays you can get Gibsons with split coils and Fenders with humbuckers. So go on then, Fender or Gibson, which I think is absolutely impossible to answer. So I don't Gibson. Want to answer it. I don't want to answer it, but I want to talk about the fact that the podcast group nearly unanimously said Fender. And I want to talk about why on earth that would be.
I think it's maybe to do with the fact that Fender have released so many things over the last... how long have we been doing this? 2 years?
2 years. Nearly. We've done 100 podcasts, haven't we?
Yeah, 104. The amount of like FSR Fenders that have come out.
Yeah.
Over the last year.
But not just. I mean, I think
Squires
it's,
as well.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the thing is it's like you know if you look at, you know, there's been a lot of models of Gibson Les Paul and a lot of models of Gibson SG. You know, we've had the 50s, 60s, 70s tributes, the future tributes. Then they changed the 70s tributes. Then there was the LPJs and the SGJs and the LPMs and the SPMs.
I guess they haven't really given you anything to hold on to.
There's so many, but like everything's based around those two core models. Whereas Fender have got, you know, they've got the Strat, they've got the Tele, the Jaguar, the Jazzmaster, the Mustang.
We saw Bass 6 come back for the first time in the last 2 years.
The Dimension
Bass was brand new.
The Bronco,
the
Rascal. You know, there's so many different... And then there's all the amps and everything that I think it's perhaps that, you know, Fender have just got whereas Gibson maybe have the depth of models, Fender have certainly got a much broader... They've got the you know, much broader spectrum of items.
I guess there's almost more to like, isn't
there? Yeah, Fender pedals, you know, Fender cables, Fender accessories.
Hey, there's a Gibson cable.
There are Gibson cables.
It's 80 quid.
Quickly, just the mention of the Rascal bass, question out to the podcast people. It is currently still available at Fender, the custom shop Jason Smith Rascal bass. £6,799.
Sorry, for a medium scale bass.
That's a master built medium scale bass.
Yeah.
The originator, the one that he basically built, and then they went, should probably just make a cheaper version of this.
That's crazy that it's so much. I mean, I was playing it actually.
I would definitely buy it.
I'm really into offsets at the moment, and so I was having a little go on the Rascal as we've got another one back in. And they are absolutely brilliant. Still, £6,000 for a medium scale. It's like, what bass players play medium scale?
I mean, I probably would if they made a medium scale.
I think what you're saying is guitarists out there who need to buy a medium scale bass.
Yeah, that's what it's for.
But on the subject of this, I mean, I think we're the wrong people to ask. I mean, I've got two Fenders and two Gibsons. So,
what
you know.
What have you got, Matt?
Two Gibsons, two Fenders.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I'm a bass player. So.
No. Three Fenders. Two Fenders, one Japanese one. So technically not Fender, but it's
Are
a
you
Fender.
Including...
And I'm also including the 61.
Including the bass? You haven't got a bass, have you?
I haven't got any bass anymore.
He
got rid of his bass.
I've got
six.
Three
I've
Fenders.
Got
if,
six,
you, if you include the bass, I've got three Fenders. I've got two Gibsons.
Yeah.
I sold the other one.
I got three Fenders, three Yamahas. So
yeah. So you know, it's difficult. I think we're certainly the wrong people to ask when you say what's better.
Yeah, absolutely.
I reckon
absolutely.
If you ask that same question in a year's time,
I'll still have the same four guitars.
It could be Gibson.
Yeah,
Matt, I think it's Matt on the podcast group says
Matt. Just
not
I
you,
just,
Matt.
I was like,
Matt,
what? What?
Matt.
That was weird because you sort of...
It's on your shoulder.
You sort of... You sort of interrupted him halfway through saying what he was saying, something boring, and it's like, are you telling me off?
I just got bored. Matt says, I'm pretty sure I'm going to buy a Jazzmaster soon. Oh, excellent decision. I really like Offset, so that is a good idea. Should I go for an American Special or the Classic Series with a Nitro finish? This is an easy question to answer, J. Cross.
I did answer this question on the podcast group.
Did you?
Normally, I let these things flow a little bit because I'd rather not spoiler my answers for what when we inevitably pick these questions to talk about on the podcast group. I don't just rehash what I have said.
But I
got really excited, and I was like, the classics. I realized we should be sitting here saying, no, you should buy the most expensive guitar that you can. If you can afford to spend the extra money and get the American, then you should. And if you can't afford to, then you should fight. Don't buy it. Get the classic. It's so good. That Nitro finish is so good.
Oh, wait, is the Nitro finish classic cheaper than the American Special?
Yeah.
You can buy a Nitro finish. Yep. I mean, if it was more, I would be saying get the Nitro finish classic. It's a Nitro finish Jazzmaster.
Yes.
It's your opportunity to own something that they won't make next year.
I don't think that's true, actually, because there have been...
I'm sorry,
Joe's gesticulating at me for making creaking noises on my chair.
All I can hear is creak.
But I'm getting excited. I know that it's a permanent resident in their catalogue currently, but, you know, you've got to think about the fact that they've been doing there's a telly that they've been doing in white blonde that's this spec with the nitro lacquer. They've been doing that for the last few years. There's a couple of Strats. I know there was definitely a Sunburst one.
The Road Worn series has always been
the
nitro.
The Road Worn is nitro. And yeah, I think they've just decided to add the Jaguar and the Jazzmaster to it.
Brilliant.
I mean, they're only available in a single finish. The Jazzmaster is in Surf Green and the Jaguar is in Fiesta Red.
So great colours.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly what you want. They are absolutely wonderful. And I for one, really hope that they sort of... This is what Fender should be doing. They should be doing authentic reissue. I mean, obviously, whichever one you buy, you're still going to have to change the bridge on and put a Mustang bridge on it.
Yep.
But I think it's... I think this is exactly what Fender should be doing, and I really hope that we see, you know, opposite to what you said, which is, you know, they won't be doing this next year. I really think they will, and I really hope that they will, and I think it's a really exciting time to be. I saw someone else. You're not using this as another question, are you?
No.
I saw someone else in the podcast. Yeah, I saw someone else in the podcast group say that they thought that people who were just getting into guitars or like guitarists nowadays were really lucky because of the amount of gear that's available now. And, you know, I really, really agree. I really think it's an exciting time to be someone who's into guitars because I think that there's so much stuff available.
Well, how many guitars do you think we've got on the shelves in this shop? Is it
1,500?
1,500 guitars? It's how many million? Is it a couple of million pounds worth of stock in the shop?
Let's maybe not have that conversation while we're sat here alone doing the podcast.
Late at night. Yeah. With the door unlocked. Yeah. This is a bad idea. But we've got a lot of stuff
and we don't have
all of it.
I reckon there's 1,500 guitars, including acoustics. There's 1,500 guitars in the shop and... I mean,
come on, every day you must have someone ask you for something that we don't have.
Well, yeah, well, there's that. But also, I mean, how many duplicates do you think we've got? Maybe five? I know we've got two Union Jack Rivieras around the corner.
Yeah, not many.
Not many at all.
That's a lot of guitars.
Yeah. And so I think it's a very, very exciting time to be into this sort of thing. But the answer to this question is the Classic Series Jazzmaster. Don't do what I did. Like, I've got the American Special telly, and I love the American Special telly. I think it's absolutely wonderful, but...
It's not a Baja.
I should have bought the Baja. Despite the fact that I have this conversation every single day, I got blinkered by the fact that it said American in the title. Don't worry about it.
Get
the right one. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, Jay, thank you for that. That brings us nicely to the end of this week's podcast, the 104th podcast in our series. Which only leaves us to say where you can get hold of us and bid you adieu. So, as always, you can find us on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. You can find us on our ordinary Facebook page, facebook.com/GAK Music, or on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also find me on Twitter at Yosef_900. Matt Knight, how can people find you?
You can find me on the group. Just search my name. You can email me matt.knight@gak.uk, or you can get me on Twitter matt_knighty. That's Knight with SIE on the end.
J Cross.
Shoot me an email, j.cross@gak.co.uk, or my Twitter is at jaybn1.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'd like to point out at this stage that in the aid of making things download friendly, we were trying to knock 10 minutes off the podcast. I'd just like to let you both know that we've run approximately 10 minutes over any of the podcasts that we have done since I've been hosting. So,
hey.
So good job, everyone, on that one.
Excellent.
But yes, tune in again next week where we'll be talking about the gear of our wildest dreams.
Wow, this is like at the end of a James Bond film.
Oh yeah, I'm pre-planning.
We will return.
Bye.
Bye.